The plan this morning, in a few moments, we're going to read this passage from Galatians chapter 2 in three different languages. That's part of our All Nations Heritage Sunday, English, Dutch, and Spanish. After the reading, I'm going to ask us to gather in groups of two or three or four people and just talk about those verses. What did you hear? You know, what's the main theme of these verses? Any questions you have? Then I'm going to talk for a little while about these verses. And then I've asked a guest speaker, Jorge Lin, to come and help us think about how do we live out these verses today in our church, in our churches, in our community. And then time permitting, we'll see how it goes. We might have a little Q&A after Jorge's done speaking. Maybe Jorge, myself, and Matt on the stage here. We'll have Matt's cell phone number on the screen. If you want to text in a question, you're welcome to do that. But we'll see how things go. But first of all, the reading. So Quinn, in English. Eddie, in Dutch. No, Eddie in Spanish. And Jane, in Dutch. So Galatians 2, 11 to 16.
All right. When Cephas came to Antioch, I opposed him to his face, because he stood condemned. For before certain men came from James, he used to eat with the Gentiles. When they arrived, he began to draw back and separate himself from the Gentiles, because he was afraid of those who belonged to the circumcision group. The other Jews joined him in his hypocrisy, so that by their hypocrisy even Barnabas was led astray. When I saw that they were not acting in line with the truth of the gospel, I said to Cephas in front of them all, "You are a Jew, yet you live like a Gentile, and not like a Jew. How is it then that you force Gentiles to follow Jewish customs? We who are Jews by birth and not sinful Gentiles know that a person is not justified by the works of the law, but by faith in Jesus Christ. So we too have put our faith in Christ Jesus, that we may be justified by faith in Christ and not by the works of the law. Because by the works of the law, no one will be justified."
Pero cuando Pedro vino a Antioquía, le resistí cara a cara, porque era de condenar. Pues antes de que viniesen algunos de parte de Jacobo, comía con los gentiles. Pero después que vinieron, se retraía y se apartaba, porque tenía miedo de la circuncisión. Y en su simulación participaban también los otros judíos, de tal manera que aún Bernabé fue también arrastrado por la hipocresía de ellos. Pero cuando vi que no andaban rectamente conforme a la verdad del Evangelio, dije a Pedro delante de todos, «Si tú, siendo judío, vives como los gentiles y no como judío, ¿por qué obligas a los gentiles a judaizar? Nosotros, judíos de nacimiento y no pecadores de entre los gentiles, sabiendo que el hombre no es justificado por las obras de la ley, sino por la fe de Jesucristo, nosotros también hemos creído en Jesucristo para ser justificados por la fe de Cristo y no por las obras de la ley, por cuanto por las obras de la ley nadie será justificado».
My letter to Petrus in Antioch was, heb ik me openlijk tegen hem verzet, want wat hij deed was niet goed. Eerst had hij mij namelijk samen met niet-Joodse christenen gegeten. Maar toen enkele Joden uit de groep van Jacobus kwamen, deed hij dat niet meer en at voortaan apart. He was bang dat die mannen die de besnijdenis zo belangrijk vonden, kritiek op hem zouden hebben. Die andere Joodse christenen en zelf Barnabas deden mee met een huichelarij. Ik zag in dat dit in strijd was met het goede nieuws. Daarom zei ik tegen Petrus, waar iedereen bij was, Petrus, u bent een Jood van geboorte. U kunt van anderen eisen dat zij als Joden gaan leven, als u zelf niet volgens de Joodse wetten leeft. Wij zijn Joden van geboorte en geen mensen die de Joodse wetten niet kent. Maar wij weten dat niemand door God als rechtvaardig beschouwd kan worden door zich aan de Joodse wetten te houden. Dat kan wel door in Jezus Christus te geloven. Wij konden ons geloof in Christus Jezus met God in het reine komen en niet door de wet te houden. Het is uitgesloten dat iemand het met God in orde kan maken door de wet gehoorzaam te zijn. Dit is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God. Let's take a few minutes, just maybe 2 minutes with someone beside you, a little groups of 2, 3, or 4 people, and just like, what did you hear? What are the questions you have? What's this passage all about? So if you just take 2 minutes and just share with someone beside you if you're willing to, and then we'll continue with the message. Okay, thanks everybody. You can chat more about the passage if you want to later on after the service. Not a bad thing to do. I want to spend a little bit of time with you this morning, at least most of what I'm going to say, just looking at the context or the backstory to these verses. Maybe it's obvious to many of us what these verses are about, but I think it might be helpful, at least for some of us, to have a little bit of what's going on. We heard at least 3 names mentioned. There's a place, and there's a sense that there is a conflict that happened between 2 very prominent leaders in the early church. And I want to just take us through these verses a little kind of bit by bit and just talk about them. And then once I'm done, I'm going to invite Jorge to come up and just try and apply these verses to our lives today. So the passage began when Cephas came to Antioch. That's the beginning of the story, at least the way that Paul is telling it. So Cephas, another name for Peter, I'm going to call him a larger-than-life leader in the early church. Disciple of Jesus, leader of the pack, sometimes rashly, but he was always out front, sort of speaking, the first one to speak, the first one to act, and he's come to Antioch. Maybe for a visit, we're not exactly sure, maybe for a kind of a longer stay, but he's in Antioch the same time that Paul is there, these 2 kind of high-powered leaders in the church. And then we hear about certain men coming from James. James, another larger-than-life leader in the early church, the leader of the church in Jerusalem, one of the brothers of Jesus, and he has sent some men from Jerusalem, probably to talk to Peter. There's something going on. And just by those men coming, there is pressure on Peter. Paul tells us he used to eat with the Gentiles. So this is maybe a little bit difficult for us to understand, but for a time when Peter was, this was before he followed Jesus and before he was a leader in the church, he would never have eaten with Gentiles. But because of Jesus, and because of a vision God had shown him, and you can read about that vision in the book of Acts, chapter 10 and 11, Peter is told that what was once really important to Jewish people, being clean and unclean, there were clean animals and unclean animals. There was clean food and unclean food. There was clean fabrics, you know, things you could wear, and unclean fabrics. There were clean people. Those are the people you can associate with and eat with. And there were the unclean people, people you would not eat with. And through this vision, in the book of Acts, chapters 10 and 11, God has shown Peter that those differences and distinctions between clean and unclean, with food, animals, but also especially with people, are no longer valid. And because of that vision, Peter has started eating with the Gentiles. But when this group came from James, when they arrived, he drew back and separated himself from the Gentiles. So he used to not eat with the Gentiles. Then he starts following Jesus, believes in Jesus, has the vision from God, He's eating with the Gentiles, and then he goes back to his former way of life. He goes back to this distinction between clean and unclean people. Now, why does Peter do this? You know, we would hope that he heard something from God. Or God changed his mind. I gave you the vision, Peter, but the vision was wrong. Here's the new vision. But we're told, Paul says, because he was afraid of those who belong to the circumcision group, which is certainly some kind of Jewish group. Maybe the same group that came from James, maybe another group, but he's fearful of them. He's maybe fearful of their rejection. If he keeps eating with the Gentiles, this other group won't receive him, will disapprove of him. He doesn't want to make waves. He wants to be accepted. And so, okay, I'll go back to the way life used to be. And the result is, and this is oftentimes what happens, when someone, the stature of Peter, does something, there are ripples. So the other Jews joined him in his hypocrisy, and by their hypocrisy, even Barnabas was led astray. So Peter is going back to his former way of life, separating himself from certain people, and other Jews are now falling. Oh, we're going to do that too. And Paul says, even Barnabas, co-worker with Paul, companion with Paul, friend of Paul, mature believer, who should have known better, even Barnabas is led astray. So my sense is, and it's only a few verses, but Paul is almost left all by himself. It's like by Peter's actions, maybe most of the church group in Antioch has gone with Peter, maybe. And so what does Paul do? Well, he opposes Peter to his face. So even though Peter is this great leader, well-respected, honored, for Paul, this is a big deal. I got to go after him. And Paul says, not just because he made a mistake, a little mistake, or he was wrong, but because he stood condemned. Which is pretty strong language, right? He's not just saying, well, he did something over here and I wasn't too crazy about it. Or his personality is different than mine and we're kind of at odds. No, he stood condemned. I believe condemned by the Christian message he was telling people about, because the message was for everyone. But also, I go back to that vision God gave him. I think he's condemned by God in some sense, but also by his own conscience. I've had the vision. I know there's no longer this distinction in the church between Jew and Gentile, and yet I'm living as if that distinction is still there. And then Paul says, I said to Cephas in front of all of them, this is a public rebuke, you're a Jew, yet you live like a Gentile because you are welcoming Gentiles, you're eating with Gentiles, and not like a Jew. How then can you force Gentiles to follow Jewish customs? So by Peter not eating with Gentiles, only with Jews again, in some sense he was telling, telling others in the church, if you want to eat with me, you got to also start following the Jewish ways. You have to become Jewish in some sense. Now hopefully that helps a little bit. Maybe some of you said, I already knew all that. I want to ask, why is Paul doing all of this? Why all the bother? Why all the fuss? And he tells us, when I saw that they were not acting in line with the truth of the gospel. So it's not just an opinion or a preference, but the gospel is at stake. The gospel that Paul is telling people about, this good news, this message, and Peter's telling people about, is that through God's grace alone, through the work of Jesus Christ the Messiah, Jew and Gentile, all people who believe in Jesus are made right with God. And because of that, as we read earlier in the service, the walls, the separation between Jews and Gentiles, between those of different cultures have come down. God has reconciled people to himself through Jesus. He's also reconciled the nations, the peoples of the world, to each other. And in the church, there is only one people of God. Now, this was a big deal for the Jewish people to kind of get their heads around, but this is the confession of the gospel message. Now, I don't know, I was thinking maybe someone this morning would be thinking, what is going on? You know, if Peter had murdered someone, we could understand Paul getting really upset. Or if Peter had swindled the church of all of its money, you know, I could see Paul getting really upset. But he's choosing not to eat with certain people. What's the big deal? Right? Like, what's the big deal of saying, I'm not eating with those people? And the big deal for Paul, as he looks at the whole situation, again, it's not just if Peter, sort of the high-powered leader, he's had the vision, he's got the same message as Paul, so all these factors together, and when Paul looks at it, he says, meals and eating with people are always about inclusion and exclusion. Meals are always about who's in the family, who's in the group, who belongs here. And by Peter's actions, he was saying, you don't belong. I'm eating with my little group here. I used to eat with you, all of you, but now I'm just eating with my little group again. And you don't belong. Who you eat with, or who you refuse to eat with, can be very much a gospel message or a gospel issue. To not eat with someone else, to refuse to eat with someone else, especially someone who is a Christian believer, saved by God's grace, because they belong to a different group or a different ethnicity, is not permissible in the body of Jesus Christ. And I think also as Paul looks at the situation, he says, this is a big deal because you're a disciple of Jesus. And who did Jesus eat with? It seems like he ate with anybody and everybody. You want to go to Tim Hortons, Jesus? I'm there, Jesus would say. You want to go to the Chinese restaurant? I'm there. You want to come to my house? I'm there. He was like, if you invited him, even if you were a religious leader that he disagreed with, that's my impression of the Gospels. He was always saying, yes, you want to invite me, I'm coming. I might have some things to say to you during our supper together, but I'm coming. So because Jesus ate with all kinds of people, because the gospel of Jesus is good news for all people, because the vision of God through Jesus is that there be a people from every tribe and nation and people at the wedding feast of the Lamb, who you eat with or who you don't eat with is a big deal in the church. And this is what I want to say in Nelson Avenue, and I don't want to get too loud, but this is really important to me. Eating is never, ever, ever just eating in the church. We think eating is just about, I'm hungry, I got to fill my stomach, and then I got to go again. Now, sometimes in North America, that's what we think. You've got a fast food restaurant, in 10 minutes you're in and out, you just keep going. But it seems like everywhere else in the world, Brazil and Ecuador and Mexico, and I would say even in the Netherlands, it's never about just fill your stomach. It's always about food and talk, and we're going to sit, and we're going to have some wine, and we're going to hear about you and me and the family and friends and your work. So the food's there, but it's never just about the food. Eating together with others, I want to say, is always about the gospel. Who gets included? And who doesn't get included? Now, I know some of you don't believe that. You're saying, this is crazy talk this morning. If you read the Bible, the Gospels, how often Jesus met and ate, and then this situation, and then where the whole of history is going, to the wedding supper of the Lamb, eating is never just eating. It's always about the good news. So I could say more about that, but I'm going to invite Jorge Lin to come up and share with us a little bit about how we might, not just eating, but how we might make connections with people from other cultures and ethnicities. I know Jorge a little bit. We met at Carey College when I was taking some courses there recently, and he was working there. And then we had coffee this past week, and I got to know him a bit more. And for me, this is how it happened. I know the message is coming up. I know the Sunday's coming up. And then he tells me, oh, I was born in Argentina. Jorge. But my parents are Taiwanese. Lin. That's how that name goes together. And then I came to Canada when I was 16. And then I've been serving a church recently to second generation Chinese people. And I'm looking at Jorge saying he's the exact right person for us this morning, better than me, to say, how can we do this? People from different cultures, how can we get together? So Jorge.
Thank you. So how do we do this? How do we be a church of diverse cultures and peoples? What are practical steps that we can take to achieve this? Well, it starts with each of us taking the initiative to reach out to people beyond our own social cultures. Over the years, when I talk to people about this same subject, churches or Christian members will tell me, well, our church welcomes everyone and anyone. We're open to receive anyone. And that is great. That is very good. That is excellent. That is the first step. But we need to take the second step. The second step is to take that initiative and go to others. So today I would like to share three practical things that we can do that I've experienced that I think are very helpful to becoming a community that actively invites others into our churches. So three practical things. The first one is join their activities. Join their activities. The Greater Vancouver area is a very diverse community. We all know that. But more often than not, each culture seems to segregate around particular activities in their community. So how do we reach them? We need to ask the following questions. First, who are these people that God has placed around in our surrounding community? For example, Walmart in Richmond has done very good research on this. They have a Chinese section in Walmart because they know that the people in their community are mainly of Chinese or Asian origin. So who are the people that God has placed in our surrounding community? Another question we need to ask is, where are they gathering in our community? Is it at the parks or any particular community center? Or a third question that we might also ask is, what are they gathering around? For example, in Richmond, the Mexican community, or Mexican guys, they gather in Minoru Park to play soccer. The Chinese elderly gather around Tai Chi in front of the community center every morning. So once we know the answers to this, it is up to us to join their activities, to take initiative. We can't always wait for people to come to us. We need to take that initiative and join their activities. This will open doors to create new relationships with people from other cultures. So join their activities and become part of their community. Which leads us to the second point today. Eat their food. We also need to eat their food. When I say eat their food, I don't mean take their food away from them. I mean eat what they eat. So again, Vancouver is full of different ethnic foods, a lot of ethnicities. You can find a lot of different types of food here in Vancouver. So What we need to understand is that when we eat their food, we're taking the first step in understanding another culture. Why? Because we all eat at least once a day, every day, unless we're fasting, right? So eating what others eat means that we're experiencing what others experience in a daily basis. In particular, if we're having an authentic meal, it helps us learn about them, and it is culturally significant. Why? Because authentic foods tell us much about them, while inauthentic foods tell us much about us. 3 months ago, I went to have a meal with my friend, Sri Lankan friends. They chose to go to eat Sri Lankan food. I don't eat spicy foods. I didn't want to go, but they all wanted to go. So I went and I joined them. I joined them, and as they were eating, they were saying things like, "This is what I ate growing up. This is well done. This is not so good. My mother makes it better." And as I was eating it, I started realizing that I was hanging out in their cultural context. It was an opportunity for me to see them in their context, interacting with their culture. So I was getting a taste of what it meant to be part of that community. More importantly, I think it helped me at that point, and it will help us learn and do something that is culturally specific to them and not us. So, side question for you to think about this later. What are other things that we can do that are culturally specific to other people rather than us? The easiest one is eating their food. But in addition to eating their food, we need to think in terms of sharing. Sharing a meal is a way to create an important connection with another culture. Reality for all cultures, when we invite a guest into our home and we offer them food, we don't say this out loud sometimes, but we are hoping that they like what we serve them, right? We're hoping that they take more than just 2 bites. Why? Because in many cultures, sometimes it is the same for us, it is a sign of respect, and it's a sign of acceptance and approval. So imagine if your guest only took 2 bites out of dinner and he stopped. Many years ago, my sister used to date someone who didn't eat the same food as we did. My parents very quickly asked the question, "What else can we offer? What dish do you like?" They were ashamed that they were not able to satisfy the guest. But more than that, after our guest left, they made a comment, "How can this person be part of our family if he doesn't eat our food?" What they were trying to say is this: how can this person be part of our family if he or she is not sharing in this moment with us? Sharing our food is also sharing in a moment with people from other cultures. Sometimes this means eating their food. Other times it means that we invite them to eat what we eat, our food. So practical thing that I can suggest that you can do this week: the Mid-Autumn Festival is coming up. For the Asian community, it's a time to eat mooncakes, fly some lanterns. My suggestion is go to the market, get some mooncakes, eat it, try it. Ask some Asian people, what is the meaning behind this celebration that you have? What does this cultural celebration tell us about them? This, in turn, will help us understand how to share the gospel with them, how to create a welcoming space in our church for them as well, and how to take initiative in reaching out to them. Also, Thanksgiving is coming up. So what a great excuse to invite people from other cultures to join our meals and say, this is why we celebrate. This is the history or family traditions that we have. We'd like to share that with you. So in the same way, point number three, the third thing that we can do is to learn their language. Learning their language does not necessarily mean speaking in their language, but to communicate understanding their values, culture, and history. So what do I mean by this? Living in Vancouver, it is easy to encounter values and customs from other cultures. But as the image of the iceberg goes, what we see on the surface is only 10%. What we see, the 10% is the food they like, their clothing, their common habits, where they shop. But what is the 90% underwater that we need to understand about them? For that, we need to ask the following questions. What are the values, culture, and history behind the things they do, the choices they make? What cultural challenges and struggles influence the decisions that they make today? What are the reasons behind the choices and priorities they make in their daily lives? And what topics do their conversations revolve around? Sometimes it is as easy as saying, Argentine people are passionate about football, talk to them about football, which is soccer. But sometimes it is deeper. I had a friend who his father-in-law came to visit from Colombia, and as we started talking, he started mentioning the rebel situation in Colombia. I didn't understand much about that, so our conversation ended very quickly. When I went home, I went online, I read on the news, I studied a little bit on the subject, so that the next time when I met him, I was able to ask him more well-educated questions, more informed questions. And it helped me have a deeper conversation with him. It helped me understand his heart and his passions. And this led us into a deeper relationship. It also helps us understand how to share the gospel from their perspective of life and from their worldview. So learning about their language is not just for interest. It starts moving us from knowing about them to knowing them. Let's take the time and learn their language. There are so many more things that I could say besides all these 3 points, but it all starts in the same place. We need to see them through God's eyes and love them as God loves them. God's love will be our strength and motivation to step out of our comfort zone and invite them into our congregation. It takes time, it takes effort, it takes work. As David Lidmore said in his book, Cultural Intelligence, it is not about finding politically correct ways to behave or speak or to make the gospel more palatable, but we do this, we reach out to them because we are the language of God today. God speaks through us to the people in our communities around us. God speaks through us when we create a welcoming environment for them. God speaks through us when we go out and invite them into our church. I hope this short sharing can help you take the next step. Thank you. Thanks, Brian.